Good morning, everyone. I'm John Hockenberry, and in for Adoree Adoji is Farai Chidea. Good morning, Farai. And it is Monday morning.
Our government.
Bailout.
Your government.
Energy resources.
Healthcare.
Iraq and Afghanistan.
Global financial recession.
The work that needs to be done.
Monday morning, and a look at the agenda. We're looking at what's getting tested, what policies and debates are headed for a decisive, critical stage this week, and what's going to be driving the global headlines in the week ahead. Joining us is our friend Marcus Mabry, the international business editor of the New York Times. He's right here in the studio. It's a week, I think, of taking stock, perhaps claiming some credit. And, you know, the rising profile of Pakistan, I think, is an interesting mix. Good morning, Marcus.
Good morning.
Let's talk, first of all, about the rally that happened last week. I suspect that this week government agencies and particularly the Treasury and the administration are going to try to position themselves to take credit for what seemed like a very positive end of the week. How's that going to work?
Well, you know, it's interesting. I think we saw it over the weekend. Everyone was out there. We saw Bernanke out there in 60 Minutes, which was a pretty unprecedented appearance by a sitting Fed chief. They are trying to instill confidence. That's been their signal. That's what they really were doing last weekend. They are very aware of the fact that, you know, if you live by the market, you die by the market.
Mm-hmm.
They're not counting on an up market this week. They're counting on, in fact, because of AIG and all the other issues that are out there, in fact, increasing turmoil this week in the markets and probably a down market.
The numbers this week, are any of them going to help the administration making its case that there is a plan in place? We've got Tuesday and Wednesday, the inflation report. We've got producer price index, consumer price index, jobless claims on Thursday, of course. What's likely to help the administration and what's likely to hurt it? Housing starts on Tuesday.
Well, this is great. Well, we're going to see these numbers, and you know, with these numbers, we'll see, are we on a deflationary spiral? Are prices still going down? Or, in fact, is there some inflation? And in this case, if we actually see prices stop decreasing, it's actually a positive sign for the economy. It means we don't have to worry so much about deflationary spiral where prices keep going down, and then companies, because they can't raise their prices, keep laying workers off. And then that leads to further price declines because, again, more people are out of work. So actually that'll be a positive, but we don't know what those numbers are going to hold. The question is going to be how bad they are. They probably will not be actually good numbers in any of these categories, but the interesting thing to watch is going to be to see how bad they are, because that's what the administration is trying to do. They're trying to walk this line and saying, on the one hand, things are horrible, everything's going to hell in the handbasket. On the other hand, there's reasons for confidence, our plans are starting to work, and they're going to keep walking that line this week, and it's going to be interesting to see how they do that with these
positioning numbers. Themselves to look like they're driving rather than just being reactive, right?
Yeah, and speaking of being proactive, how important, we've been talking a lot on The Takeaway about the psychology of the numbers game, and do you think that the psychology of simply saying, yes, the recession is ending this year and, you know, happy days will be here again, will there be a psychological impact that will push forward from the Fed chair?
Well, you know, it's not going to be enough. And I think what we're going to see is more concrete details this week. For instance, as soon as today, we're going to see the White House coming out and saying there's a $5 billion credit facility they're making available to small businesses. So it doesn't look like they're just helping Wall Street. And so they're hoping that will instill confidence and make people start to believe that credit markets are still functioning, for instance.
Well, one tangible thing, I mean, it's unclear if $5 billion credit for small business is going to outbalance the anger people had for what AIG. What emerged from AIG over the weekend. Here's Barney Frank.
With AIG, I would just say we need to find out, one, are they legally recoverable? We can't just violate law, legal obligations. I understand that. But I do want to find out at what point these legal obligations were incurred. Who said at what point we're going to give these bonuses no matter what? And I do think it's inappropriate for those people to stay in power at that company.
AIG will grant bonuses under contractual obligations, and the U.S. has to pay. That's Congressman Barney Frank expressing outrage. I'm telling you, my wife came close to picking up the pitchfork this weekend. She was ranting and raving about this all weekend. What's the administration to do to not feel as though they're in bed with AIG and are helping out these rich people?
Well, you know, this, you got to feel slimy, right, in this case. And there's not much that they can do. I mean, as Chairman Frank was saying, if these things are legally recoverable, then let's recover them. If these bonuses are not legally recoverable, let's find out why not. You know, that's great to say. But we can expect a lot more political machinations this week, and there will be great foment because there is great anger in the land. We can expect lots of political machinations this week. There is a on Wednesday, there's going to be a House subcommittee meeting, financial subcommittee on insurance, of course, AIG, the world's largest insurer, and the credit default swaps. It's kind of insurance based on whether bonds move up or down. The credit AIG actually was so linked to the global economy, banks, governments, state governments all around the world. That's why the federal government has given them, you know, $170 billion in bailouts so far. Unfortunately, there's not a lot they can do about this. We can see these political machinations, but we cannot expect a lot of real change this week. And I don't think a lot of that bonus money will be coming back.
Well, this contract law, this notion that we can't violate contracts because we live in a nation that is, ruled by laws, the notion of rule of law gets a little fuzzy when you talk about Guantanamo. On the front page of the New York Times, European leaders are getting together to talk about quid pro quos as how to close Guantanamo, and there's a question of international law and also cooperation. How is that going to play out?
Well, this is one of the fulcrums of one of the promises that the President Obama made during the campaign was that he would close down Guantanamo, the detention center there of terror suspects, within a year. Now, the problem is, what do you do with them once you close it down? There are several different categories of detainees, and about 60 of the 200 and something there right now are actually considered not to be dangerous and actually able to extradite to other countries. The problem is some of them would face persecution if they were to go back to their own countries, mostly in Arab lands. The question is, will the Europeans take them? This is the first round of what's going to be a series of probably very complex talks between the administration and the Europeans over who will you take, under what circumstances, and most importantly, what will American intelligence agencies tell the Europeans about the candidates to relocate, for instance, to their different countries. The Europeans are going to see that the Americans are going to take some of those detainees ourselves.
There is certainly a lot of scrutiny among the Arab world and the Middle East over Guantanamo and over some of the maneuvers that the U.S. has made around what we call the war on terror. But there's also the question of what's actually going on in what we broadly call the Arab world. News this week coming from Pakistan, which is in continuing political turmoil. Those are supporters of Pakistani opposition leader Nawaz Sharif, who was put under house arrest on Sunday. Protesters plan a march on the Capitol to demand the reinstatement of sacked former Supreme Court Judge Iftar Chaudhry. Now he's been reinstated. So what can we expect ahead in Pakistan?
You know, Pakistan is without a doubt the greatest foreign policy challenge facing this administration, which can seem surprising given the fact that, you know, we have the largest majority of our troops right now in Iraq.
But, Marcus, it seems like this week Pakistan begins to drive that agenda. The administration isn't really able to say, we're running it. It seems like the profile is emerging that Pakistan is driving the foreign agenda in South Asia, including Afghanistan.
No question about it, John. I mean, Afghanistan, progress cannot be made in Afghanistan. And the president was clear on this before. He was actually inaugurated. Progress cannot be made in Afghanistan until you have Pakistan under control. But the problem is, in Pakistan, what we've seen with this phenomenal reversal by Pakistani leadership is that they're not in control of the agenda. So the problem is, without them being in control, you know, it's not clear who's driving that train at this point, whether it's them or the opposition.
You know, for years we've heard G8, G7, now there's G20. I've always wondered what the G stood for. I think it stands for guilty. All of the positioning and posturing that's going into the meeting that's coming up in the UK in April, there was a meeting over the weekend. What can the G20 group of guilty, emerging, rich nations who hold all the wealth in the world, what can they possibly do to drive events? It seems like they're less and less drivers and much more reactive here.
Well, you know what we saw from the G20 this week, and together they can control these foreign ministers and central bank chiefs who were there over the weekend outside London, control 85% of the global economy. We're living in a horrible economic downturn that is global, that we're probably likely to see the first decrease in global growth and certainly in global trade in 80 years, which is significant. So these guys are all trying to stay ahead of this thing. This is huge. It's magnificent. It's not clear what they can do, but right now they're trying to work on two different tracks. They're saying, number one, we're going to increase stimulus plans around the world, and number two, we're also going to fix the financial architecture, but it's not clear whether the Americans or the Europeans win, and the Americans want the stimulus first, the Europeans want the architecture.
And the huge challenge, of course, is to do this meeting without coming out looking like they're utterly impotent and have no influence whatsoever. Your purview as international editor for the New York Times actually holds no bounds, it turns out.
Do you believe in miracles?
No.
Marcus Mabry, Battlestar Galactica ends on Friday. What's the challenge for America?
Well, this may be one of the most serious issues we're faced with. Those of us who are great fans of the Battlestar Galactica, it's the future of humanity.
All right, Marcus Mabry, international business editor. That's the agenda.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.